It's 10 minutes to 8 on RN Breakfast, and we're continuing our budget coverage this morning. It's a budget based on quicksand. That's what Opposition Treasury spokesman Joe Hockey says. Anyway, we spoke to him earlier this morning.
It's not real. It's a budget based on quicksand. All this talk about a surplus, it's in 3 years' time, Fran.
On the weekend, you were saying 3 to 4 years would be a good effort.
Yeah, but it's got to be a real surplus, not a $1 billion surplus. I mean, come on, they've had a $1 billion blowout just on the computers.
Now, I remember your side of politics delivering a very tiny surplus and claiming it's a surplus.
Well, we delivered. That's the key word. That's the key word, Fran. We delivered.
Will the government deliver? I suppose that's the question, which we'll explore further with our budget panel now, squeezed into our tiny Parliament House studio. Heather Ridout, Chief Executive from the Australian Industry Group, Claire Martin from the Australian Council of Social Services, and economist Saul Eslake with the Grattan Institute. Good morning to you all.
Morning, friend.
Thanks for fronting up this morning. Now, just a response there. Let's get your comments first, your reaction to this budget. A model of fiscal restraint and good economic management, or tax and spend and based on rubbery figures, as the opposition charges?
Fran, I think for a pre-election budget, this is a fiscally conservative document. There's net policy initiatives over the four-year forward estimates period of just over $7 billion, by my reckoning. That compares with $34 billion and $50 billion in the two last pre-election budgets of the former government. So they've met the commitment to keep spending to growth to less than 2%, and they've applied nearly all of the revenue windfall from the stronger than expected economic performance to improving the bottom line. I think that's a fiscally responsible and conservative thing to do in these circumstances.
Is it fair enough, though, to bank on the sort of rebound in revenue that the government's banking on?
I think those forecasts appear credible. There are risks around them, of course, as the experience of the last 2 years have told us. But on the basis of those numbers, I think that the budget arithmetic looks credible and responsible.
Heather Ridout, what do you think?
I share Saul's view. I mean, I think it is a cautious but credible budget. And I think it's very important that it is, because we've had 6 hikes in monetary policy in 7 meetings, and you really do need fiscal policy to do its share of the heavy lifting. The other issue, though, for us is it's investing in important areas like skills. The skill shortage is going to be one of the biggest, if not the biggest, macroeconomic issue going forward for Australia. And we really need to do something about it. And the investments they've made there and the reforms they've signalled are really important.
So are they enough?
Well, I think there may need to be more money, but that's going to rely a lot on negotiations with the states, the same old issue. But they're dealing with literacy and numeracy problems. They're dealing with critical skill areas of skill shortage. They're putting in major reforms to VET. And I think they're all really good things. And some of the stuff hidden there that other people don't find that sexy, industry finds it very sexy.
Is there a bit of paying homage to a few areas, though, and sort of ticking the boxes but not really delivering enough to make the change?
Well, you know,
Is that a danger, or is that all that can be done?
In the corridors yesterday, Fran, a lot of people were saying, oh, they've cut too quickly. They didn't need to go back into deficit so quickly because they haven't done what we wanted them to do. And certainly for industry, there's areas... Going to surplus too quickly. And in areas like export support, they haven't done much there. The R&D program still sits there as a major problem. And we're going to keep working on that one. So there are areas that they, you know, the farmers are unhappy, they haven't done anything for them. And this is a bit resonant of that 1996 moment, you know, when they really put the scythe through a lot of those measures. They haven't done it as savagely, but there's still a feeling that the government's been pretty restrained on spending.
And Claire Martin, I imagine there's a pretty big feeling of just that amongst your members.
Fran, I'm describing the budget as much good, some very small nasties, but the sad thing is the emissions we're seeing. And I've described it really as a health and surplus budget. I mean, we're pleased to see the pathway back to surplus, albeit a small surplus, and the investment in health. I mean, don't underestimate it. You know, $2.2 billion going into primary care in the budget last night. That's significant. I mean, that will, for the people I represent, low-income Australians, mean much better access to doctors, to nurses, for their health generally. And that put together with the previous announcements means a significant investment in health. So some really positive things in this budget. Heather's talking about the investment in skills, again, crucial for our future. Our disappointment...
It's not really a welfare budget, though, is it?
No. Health is really important. Making tax simpler is important. Skills investment important. But I also think that the emissions are there. The emissions, we're not doing something about low-income in terms of getting jobs. Those who've been unemployed for a while, we've got skills development, but nothing for transition to work. We haven't got anything about oral health. You know, we know 2 million Australians don't go to the dentist because they can't afford it. Nothing in the budget about, you know, dental care.
Something like dental care is a big ticket item, though. I mean, Heather and Saul, perhaps this wasn't the budget to be delivering on a promise like that, no matter how many Australians might want it. What do you think?
Well, not without making major savings somewhere else in the budget.
And a pre-election budget
is not really the time to expect that to happen. Mind you, of course, the government didn't make major savings in the immediate post-election budget either. And I think that's sort of, if I had a criticism, it would be that having justifiably criticised profligate spending under the previous government during the mining boom, this government really hasn't done much to wind a lot of that back.
And Heather, this government in its across its three budgets really hasn't done a lot of cutting. It's not a tough government in that sense when it comes to budget time, is it?
Well, I think they went through the GFC, which required them to spend a lot of money.
Yep.
And they didn't have any option there, and they spent it. You know, I'm very supporting of this education spending. I mean, if we've gone into deficit to actually upgrade Australian schools and bring them to some decent state where kids in poor areas can go to a school that's not broken down with dunky old toilets and stuff, I mean, it's not a bad thing. But I think they're now winding this thing back, and I think they're doing it in a pretty sensible way, because we're not out of the woods yet economically, to use that overused expression. There's still a lot of fragility out there, and business can't quite see beyond 6 months or so. It's still quite clouded, and, you know, the international stuff's worrying.
Well, just on that then, because no matter what the Treasurer was saying, he was keen to talk about the consolidation of the budget, keeping the cap, the 2% cap on spending, okay, tick, tick. But a lot of it, the return to surplus and what happens in those in the future years, is about getting good receipts in, company receipts, tax. It's about terms of trade, strongest terms of trade in 60 years. Is it fair to bank on that, given the international climate? What if China falters?
Well, if China falters, the terms of trade wouldn't recover as much, and we would not be returning to surplus as quickly as is projected in the budget, but nor should we be seeking to do so in those circumstances, would be my observation. I mean, yes, the government is banking on revenue coming from the commodities boom. It could end up being stronger than that. That's certainly the lesson of the previous mining boom, is that Treasury typically underestimated these revenues rather than overestimated them.
So it's fair enough to bank on that?
Well, it's certainly better to bank them than to spend them, which is what the previous government tended to do, either in the form of tax cuts or increased spending. This government has put all of the revenue gains it's assuming will occur into delivering a better budget bottom line.
The clock is chasing us, but Heather Riddell, there's other financial forecasts in there too. Inflation forecast to remain steady at 2.5 years over the next few years. Growth to get 2.5%, I beg your pardon. Growth can get very strong, 4% growth in a couple of years' time. 4% growth, 2.5% inflation. How does that work, or does that signal more interest rate?
Well, I think this is predicated on them having a sound and sensible fiscal policy. I mean, interest rates are now, it's back to sort of normal, so-called normal terms for business. They're quite above normal terms. They're quite, you know, quite tight. Certainly, if the government don't behave sensibly in relation to their spending, interest rates will rise, and they know that, and the Reserve Bank know that. So I think they had to be pretty cautious. I think, I mean, that 2.5% is midway through the Reserve Bank's target. It's probably where it should be. I'm not too worried. 4% is a good result. Trend's about 3.25%, so
4% is a great result. Can it be there with 2.5% inflation without interest rate rises?
Fran, we've got a rebound from a recovery, from a downturn. It was probably a recession, no matter what it was called, and it's not unusual to get quite strong growth. And we are going into a period where we've got, you know, quite a lot of resource constraints, and that's why areas like skills investment, etc., are very important.
So,
well, the budget and the Reserve Bank both assume that interest rates will rise by about a percentage point over the next year or so. That's a technical assumption on which the forecasts are premised. Frankly, I find it hard to believe that the economy can grow at an above-trend rate in circumstances where at what the Treasurer now defines at full employment, that is 4.75% for 2011-12, and still have an inflation rate at the midpoint of the target band. And I don't think the Reserve Bank believes that either.
Okay. And Claire Martin, final word from you, because this is a pre-election budget. We'll be going to the polls in a few months' time, no matter what happens. The people you represent, will they be wanting to re-elect a Labor government on the basis of the promises within this budget and what they see?
In terms of our unemployed, there is certainly an appreciation that unemployment didn't go as high as we thought it would. I mean, that would have been 1 million Australians out of jobs. We're currently at 600,000. to tackle the kind of difficulties you face when you're unemployed and long-term unemployed, for that group of Australians, I think they're disappointed. They feel neglected. They've got no increase in payment. They lost out last year in the budget. So for that group, pretty sad times.
And that reflects this as a pre-election budget. Not a lot of votes in helping the unemployed, is there?
No.
Claire Martin, Heather Ridout, Saul Leslake, thank you very much for joining us. Saul Leslake from the Grattan Institute, Heather Ridout from the Australian Industry Group, and Claire Martin from ACOSH. You're listening to ABC Radio National Breakfast. That's where I'll leave our coverage of Budget 2010. After the news, we'll cross back to London. Big political shake-up going on in Britain. It's 8 o'clock.